Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to the Big Brown Gadfly, and I am your host, the Big Brown Gadfly, and I'm so happy to have with me such an esteemed guest and good friend, Jeff Younger, who is running for office in Texas. And right. If we can get Jeff Younger into the Texas state legislature, then it's going to be so amazing, you know, and I wish I could do more to help him. I've been kind of kidnapped by reality for the last couple of months, but I'm really happy that he's doing what he's doing. Welcome aboard, Jeff. How are you?
How you doing, Bobby? It's been a long time. I missed you, man.
I know. Can you hear me pretty well?
Great. Absolutely.
These are cheap $5 Walmart headphones, and I find that
they work as well
as you need. All right. Well, today, Jeff has limited time. He's running for political office, and what I really want to talk about with him is education. I'm a lifelong educator. I've worked in the field since the late 1990s, so I'm going on almost a quarter of a century working in the field of education. And he's running for political office. And right now, strange as things can get, education seems to be a centerpiece of the elections, of the tug of war between the two political parties. And what do you think of this, Jeff? Is this good news for us, or why do you think this is happening all of a sudden?
Well, I think broadly it is good news. I think conservative families have used public school as almost like a daycare dumping ground for their kids.
Yes.
They expect teachers to do all kinds of things that they're not equipped to do. And I think a lot of conservative parents are starting to wake up to the fact that the schools aren't going to be able to teach them a traditional American values. Traditional Christian values, they're actually going to undermine those things. And so broadly, I think it's positive. But I do think there's some negatives, because I think the approach that conservatives are taking is clearly the wrong one and has been proven to fail in the past.
Right. Well, you know, first let's talk about the good news. I've waited for so many decades for education to be the centerpiece. I felt like when healthcare was the big centerpiece, people who were doctors and nurses, they became the subject of political debate. Stressful, but I always envied them.
Right.
You know, I remember when real estate, when housing became an issue, all the real estate brokers, their job was the subject, or the military, you know. And so this is now the time when the stuff that I do on a daily basis that I've done for years is all of a sudden the subject of debate. And I'm happy that conservatives have noticed it, because for so long, conservatives wrote it off. Issue, not our zoo, not our monkeys, etc. But so it is good. And I am glad that conservatives are realizing that there are no easy answers. You can't just tell everyone to homeschool, that, you know, you can't just tell them everyone to go send their kids to Christian schools. Well, I'll tell you about the latest news about Christian education and why that is falling apart, and why homeschooling also, because of the publications that people are using for homeschooling, that also is falling apart. So I'm glad that that's the way to go. But first, let's just talk about the conservative approach to education, because I do agree with you that the way they're going about it is sideways. It's perhaps ill-advised. What would you say is the thing that people should be talking about? What is the most pressing need of education? And then we're going to go on to where conservatives should readjust to try to put the focus in the right place.
You know, I think the fundamental question should be, why did it cost so little to produce highly educated people in the past? I mean, just 50 years ago, not long ago, 50 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And you can spend so much money and have no results now.
Yes. Yes.
And that's the fundamental issue that nobody wants to talk about.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and it's the financial corruption is the number one thing. Yeah, yeah.
Students are essentially being turned into financial derivatives. They're seen by the state of Texas, for example, as a source of data that can be sold to Google and other companies. Data collection goes on in the schools. And Bobby, as a public school teacher, you know this. The data collection on students is insane. And all of this data is packaged and sold by the state of Texas, and they make a lot of money off of it. So students have become a commodity. You know, the federal government pays so much for students to attend public school. They can sell their data. And so and in many small towns, high school sports is the political currency, you know, of the town. And so students, again, just become commodities for politicians. And so this is what I call, you know, how we talk about the monetization or financialization of all the assets in the country. You know, the way Wall Street turns everything into paper derivatives and creates these bubbles. They're actually doing this to students now.
Yeah, the one of the things that I think you bring up, which is so important, is there is a lack of accountability in terms of where the money is going. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of the conservative focus right now tends to be on the problem with teachers. So yeah. The movement to ban critical race theory focuses a lot on teachers. The blowback is felt by the teachers, not by the administrators. And people have a wildly distorted view of how much teachers actually earn. They think that they're being paid these fat salaries. And it's true that there are months off, but you know, if you are teaching a load of 150 public school students, you know, that's a tough rat race to get through. Yeah, I think you brought up one of the classic examples of where the focus is a little bit off on the conservative side, to say the least, is the issue of women's sports. Okay, so this is a classic example of it's a somewhat related to education issue, but really what the core is that schools as an institution have become a place that actually creates gender confusion where there doesn't need to be any. They actually are investing in people being uncertain about their gender, in forcing people to question who they are as men and women with no prompting other than the fact that the school is
in third grade, you know,
right. But, and so, you know, putting aside the Florida law for a moment, it seems as though conservatives know that something is wrong, but they seize on Leah Thomas, this swimmer who was a man who, you know, has transitioned to trans and is winning in women's sports. And so all of the dialogue becomes, we have to save women's sports. Yes. You know, do you have any concerns about that consuming so much of our time?
Yeah, I have for a very long time, Bobby. So as you know, the Coppell School District was transitioning my son for a year without my knowledge to a girl. Now, I take my boy to school in, you know, in boy's clothes, and the teacher would give him a dress and they'd make him use the girls' restroom. OK, so they're using various laws that shield psychologists to do that legally. And so this is kind of thing is going on. And then what happens is they'll create this sideshow with women's sports and they'll fix it. They'll, you know, they'll outlaw boys, you know, biological males participating in female sports to give us the illusion that they fix the whole problem. It's really a kind of a sideshow, and it's not addressing any of the huge issues in the curricula, right? And a lot of this curricula is set at the Texas State Board of Education and in TASB, the Texas Association of School Boards. And people don't know this. You know that the school districts are often being forced to take a lot of this curriculum material, right? And it comes from the state as well.
Right.
But it's a sideshow. The sports thing is a side. And overall, I'm bothered by the fact that we spend so much on sports in public education.
Yeah, I was wondering whether you were going to have that same reaction, because that's one of my related concerns about this obsession with protecting women's sports. It feeds this very conservative delusion that somehow the most important thing about education and gearing up young people is to have effective sports teams, competitive sports teams, because they think that it builds character, or they think that school spirit is going to rally around it. But while we have this obesity epidemic, and while we have these people who are so unhealthy, and the explosion in the number of people who are diagnosed with asthma, with allergies, with autoimmune, all of these health-related things, The obsession with sports creates a spectator culture. It doesn't create an athletic culture, because most of these kids in school are not actually getting any exercise. You know, there's one group of athletes that are getting a kind of almost destructive form of physical training. You know, they have the TBIs, they have, you know, all of these stress fractures from what they do. They're encouraged to take performance enhancing drugs. And then the rest of the people are fat. And I think this is a big part of education. We have to look at why so many of our kids are fat. Why so many of them do not have physical endurance, because I think it feeds the health crisis that we see in the whole country. But it's something that conservatives are not tagging onto, because they have this illusion that if they're talking about sports, they're talking about the health of all the children. You know, how do they get to that kind of delusion?
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus.
Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. It's because really we've come to associate sports with spectacle. You know, mm-hmm. You know, these were kids' games. No one ever thought that football would be elevated to the, you know, something right. where players would get millions of dollars. These are children's games. Mm-hmm. You know, baseball used to be called rounders, and it was a girls' game in the United Kingdom. You know, nobody thought it would ever become what it actually is. But, you know, this is a really important point that, you know, sports is an important part of education. But unfortunately, most children are not getting that education. They're not playing sports.
Absolutely.
A semester of physical education course, which is more about testing. You know, that's another thing. Physical education has become a place where they test children to get data on the physical fitness standards of children. It's not something where you engage in actual sporting activity. And the other thing is sports don't cost a lot of money. You know, field hockey doesn't require, you know, a tremendous amount of expensive equipment. Rugby doesn't cost a tremendous amount of equipment. You know,
but track and field, all you need is literally a field and a pair of sneakers.
And yet we're, you know, these athletic budgets are tens of millions of dollars for these things. Mm-hmm. And then these schools can't build a chemistry lab for their students.
Right. Right. I mean,
so
it's disgusting.
Simultaneously miseducating them physically, literally miseducating them physically. And then we're not educating them academically because we put the money in the wrong places.
Right. And then they put all this money into big stadiums. And in Texas, if you're a successful high school football coach, that's almost a prelude to running for political office. It's seen as such a high profile thing. And and everything that you get with pro sports, you get with high school sports, you know, with these highly competitive teams, all the cheating, all of the, you know, financial mismanagement and all of that kind of stuff. So, you know, that I definitely agree with you about that. And I have the same concern about the focus on women's sports.
Yeah. If you go to my website, jeffyoungerfortexas.com, go to my issues page. You'll see that I have a whole legislative program around eliminating the property tax, because Texas runs gigantic billion-dollar surpluses every year. And there's just simply no reason to be doing this to our citizens and have them rent their land from the government. You know, as part of that program, I'm asking that the legislature pass a law that every year, just like every other large corporation, every year, the school districts must pay for a forensic audit of all of their expenses and prove to the state that they're using these funds for the constitutional purposes for which public education was created. And those purposes are extremely limited. It's reading, writing, arithmetic, and history. These are the main things that the Constitution of Texas establishes for students in Texas. And so much of this money is being spent on other things. And I think the school districts need to behave like big companies and endure regulatory audits every single year.
Yeah, that sounds like a great idea. I mean, just to be able to keep track of the money. Yes. And to make it subject to public debate. But this is why I'm telling you that it makes me happy that conservatives are paying attention to education, but it's also frustrating because they're not tackling the financial corruption the way that they should. For instance, at the college level, I'm just waiting for the moment where they basically start taxing these endowments for these nonprofit status colleges, you know? And every year there's a couple people who talk about it and it never goes anywhere in the legislature because there's still too many ties of affinity between the people who benefit from these financial schemes and the people in office. You know, well, I think of all of those, yeah.
Yeah, I'm a little hesitant to talk about it because the last person to challenge the financial hegemony of the UT system was beset by multiple DAs who started filing criminal charges against him. I mean, the UT system is so politically powerful in this state, right? But let's be honest about this, right? The large university systems, UT, Baylor, Texas A&M, these systems are so wealthy, so incredibly wealthy. They have billions and billions of dollars in assets. Mm-hmm. That they actually hire hedge fund managers and they operate as hedge funds. They are not public education institutions anymore. Mm-hmm. They're hedge fund operations. They make unbelievable amounts of money just from their investment activities. And it's an absolute travesty that they even charge Texas citizens for tuition because they make billions of dollars from their endowments and investments. So there is a huge problem at the university level. And of course, you know, the corruption in textbooks. I mean, it's outrageous.
It's terrible.
And I keep wondering, I mean, for example, what exactly has changed in the pedagogy of Calculus I since 1950? Nothing.
Nothing.
So why are we spending all these gigantic sums of money on these new calculus editions when we could just get reprints of books from the 1950s that trained the NASA engineers, for God's sakes.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't get better than that, right? And those are free, by the way. Mm-hmm. So it doesn't make any sense the way costs are allocated to students in the higher education. And it doesn't make sense how costs are allocated to public schools for students either, right? Mm-hmm. Because there's so much administrative overhead in these districts. And so much money is going into things that do not fulfill the constitutional function of the schools.
Right. Well, okay. So I want to talk about another offshoot of this, which is you remember when there was a lot of preoccupation about the women's restrooms and the men's restrooms. And I think that there's a really good reason for a lot of that concern about who's going to use which restroom.
Right.
One of the concerns I had was I felt like conservatives were falling into a little bit of the feminist trap of making the whole trans issue be about women threatened by men again, because men are going in, which I mean, I don't want men in my daughter's bathroom. So I totally get that. But at a time when now men are only 39% of college students, when boys are by and large checking out, it's a regular occurrence in Texas where the top 10 of high schools is very often 9 girls and 1 boy, or even 10 girls. The fact that you girls are now, and I just heard the report that if they're looking at the younger generation, the below the age of 30, women are already closing the income gap and actually doing better than their male counterparts, partly because they have these educational degrees, that they're a majority of the students, even in Ivy League schools, by a lot. You're talking about 60% of them are women at a time when boys are just checking out. It's interesting how conservatives are still kind of joining in with the feminists in making all of the issues be about how girls feel at school. And, you know, how can you get even in at the level of the national debate, how can you address the fact that males are being systematically cut out of the education process?
You know, we're going to have to confront something, in the conservative movement. And we haven't, how do I put this delicately? We haven't been able to reach a point where we can admit that men and boys have lives that are important and that men and boys also struggle. We just haven't reached that point. Let me give you an example from the transgender bill, the transgender sports bill in Texas that was passed in the last session. True, it did ban biological males from competing against females in sports, okay? But it also specifically authorizes girls to compete against boys in sports.
Why?
So this is the thing. There's a sense that if girls want to enter into boys sports, they're not disadvantaged. And there's a sense that it's empowering for a girl, I think, to, for example, be a football kicker or something like that. But, you know, I recently had an interaction with a radical feminist. And she was sitting next to me, and I said, I don't want girls in boys' sports. And she said, why? They're not disadvantaged in any way. I don't understand. And I said, I don't want to train my son to hit girls.
Yeah.
I don't want my son to be trained to go beat a girl down because she's kicking a football. I don't want my son to wrestle with a girl and be trained to hurt a girl on a wrestling mat. And if my son chooses not to do that, he doesn't get the scholarship. Okay, so it's exactly the same problem as transgender males entering female sports. So we're not willing to talk about the lives of men and boys, and we don't treat them as though they're important.
Right.
There's an entire cabal of Republican women in the Texas legislature, Swanson and some others. Swanson is one of the most infamous ones, who literally just goes out of her way every year to do enact any legislation she can against boys in schools, anything she can do, right?
Like what kind of stuff?
So she always creates special and exclusionary programs for girls in schools.
Right.
There's all kinds of special earmarked funds that go to schools that cannot be spent on boys.
Yeah, I don't think that we need to do that anymore.
No.
Is this crazy for me to say? I don't think we need any more. The schools are now at all levels. They're so completely geared towards females.
And it's true in law school and medical school, and it's starting to be true in engineering schools.
Yeah, even in the STEM. I mean, just the structure of how girls mediate conflict, of how they negotiate new ideas, how they argue, how they debate, how they contest things with the teacher, everything. It's all feminized. And you know where I see that the most? I'll be honest with you. This is me going out on a limb here. But if you look at how the United States has tried to deal with the Russia-Ukraine, the United States has... girl.
Bobby, I'm getting some interference and I can't hear you and you're frozen on the screen.
Oh, can you hear me now?
Yeah, that's better.
Okay. Yeah, I don't know what's going on. My internet has been working so lately, but now it's sometimes freezing. If you look at how the United States has, tried to deal with Russia, to me, it just seems like completely a country whose State Department and whose military were trained in a system that was designed for girls. It's like, we're going to take away your credit cards and we're going to make it so no one wants to talk to you. And, I almost feel like if someone's going to use weapons of mass destruction, I'm afraid it'll be us because we don't want to get dirty by sending ground troops in. We want to do everything through sanctions and through diplomatic isolation and through, all these
it's the kinds of things. Violence that you see girls using. Boys use physical violence and girls use social violence. Yeah.
So it's almost like our educational system has created a whole society that is lacking 50% of the coping mechanisms,
if you look at, Jordan Peterson makes this great point. He's talking about men and women in the workforce. And he points out that we have never figured out the rules by which men and women can strenuously disagree. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Disagreement with women is often seen as super aggressive by women, right?
Right.
Women are free to disagree as vehemently and as vociferously and sometimes as violently as they wish. But men are not allowed to strenuously disagree with women in public places and in workplaces. Well, then how can this be? I'll tell you, as a candidate running for office, I've been told many times, don't show any disagreement with these women when you're running for office. And I'm like, look, this is politics. You know, the issues we're discussing are very important. It's about mostly about our children and our families. And if we're in a situation where men are not allowed to disagree with women strenuously, how can we possibly have a functioning democracy? And that's really, it's really what's at stake here. And in large companies and educational institutions, it's even worse than that.
Right, you know, yeah.
The reason that men self-select out of these universities is they clearly recognize that it is a rigged game against them. I just saw another study. I've seen dozens of these studies. They just did another one out of the UK, and they did it in Canada, the US, and the UK. And they submitted papers to teachers. This is at university level. The same papers under a girl's name and a boy's name. And the girls got on average a letter grade higher than the boys for the exact same work. So there is definitely grade inflation in the schools going on for girls. Boys know this game is rigged, and that's why they're not playing it. And it's true in the workplace. It's another reason why boys are saying, I don't want to be in this corporate life. I'd rather be, in the trades. I'd rather be in my own business. I don't want to play this rigged game.
Yeah. Well, okay, it makes sense. Now, here's the other thing. Okay, let's talk about one of the other things. I see in the conservative commentariat this widespread recognition that education is falling apart. And what everyone says is, pull your kids out of public school. Don't send them to public school. Okay. So there's two answers that usually come out of that. The first is send them to a Christian school. Now, there's a thing called the Association of Christian Schools International, ACSI. Yep. They have signed on to all of the exact same curriculum things that people... That they've signed on to the CRT, they've signed on to the gender and sexual. I mean, they package it, they shift it towards the kind of revoice dialectic. You know, they try to make it sound like it's not the same thing, but it's on that path there, and it's certainly not going to stop the student who's going through that system from being dragged by popular culture towards all of the same cultural decadence see in the schools. And it's everywhere with the Christian schools, because this was why people like me and my friend Tom Littleton, we fought so hard when I was in the Southern Baptist Convention. Mm-hmm. And we pissed off a lot of people because we called out a lot of the bullshit that was going on in that denomination. Yeah. And we did it because we saw what was happening in the pipeline, because the seminaries were churning out these people who were going to be the future pastors. And they were turning out all of these undergraduate Christian degrees that were going to go on to become the Christian educators. And they were all buying it hook, line, and sinker. By the time I left Christian education 2 years ago and some, it was already lost. Those students were already more far gone than the people that you would see at UT Austin, to be honest with you. They were just, and they were worse because they had this idea that somehow Jesus told them to be crazy liberal, and because it was even so much more feminized, because so often the men that are in Christian education are even more feminized than the men that are in secular education. There's this meekness about them, and they all want to kind of white knight their way through everything. And so, Christian education is not the answer. The other thing that they bring up is homeschooling. Okay. Yes. Which the reality is a lot of people cannot homeschool. And I don't know. I don't know how can you explain that to conservatives in a way that won't lead to name calling and won't lead to you being called? I mean, I've had people who say it's a sin not to homeschool your children, that God will punish you for not homeschooling your children. And it's just not an economic reality for a lot of people. They just can't do it. And a lot of them, if they don't have the educational background themselves and they're trying to homeschool, they're going to reach out to the Bob Jones University Press, or they're going to reach out to the Khan Academy, whatever the homeschooling publishers are, whoever is publishing the homeschooling materials.
We're also co-opted.
which are also co-opted. They're also co-opted. They're all part of the same corruption. Mm-hmm. So I think that do you feel like we're getting closer to the point where conservatives understand that they have to address the national schooling system, or are they still going to keep on attacking the public schools and then filling the gap with the same rhetoric, which I feel is going to lead to the exact same problem, but just without the tax breaks, you know, or so without the
years. And I'm going to speak from an economic point of view here. Mm-hmm. Okay. Rather, I usually speak, you know, as you know, from a philosophical and ideological, right. I'm going to speak just purely from an economic point of view. Mm-hmm. The reform of the public schools is a 50 plus year project. And the reason is our leftist opponents have been very careful to link education funding into transportation funding, defense funding, these giant government programs that just never go away. And they all come with specifications. They all come with strings, and you take that money and that's the end of that, right? And you're not getting rid of billions of dollars out of the school. It's not going to happen. Unless we can make the schools be reasonable about how they spend money, which will be a reform project that will take many decades, okay? So what do we do? And we should do that. We should embark on that project to reform public education. What do we do in the meantime? I'm going to rely on a really good economic analysis from George Mason University, which looked at what happens when most people start to lose faith in public education. Because most parents are quite keenly aware that they probably don't have the skills to educate their children up to a high school level. So what they predict is the advent of private teachers. It could be online, it could be in smaller schoolhouses in cities. Mm-hmm. And these private teachers will be highly paid and highly recompensed by many students, while it will still be cheap for individual students. And the teachers that are very good at imparting information and in getting their students to be successful in passing exams and demonstrating their knowledge of these subjects will be highly sought after and will be able to charge confiscatory rates. And I think there's going to be a massive decentralization of education in parallel with a public school reform movement.
Right.
And I think decentralization will put some well-needed pressure on the public schools to reform. Mm-hmm. And I think guys like you, who, you know, Yale educated, the way you approached teaching and understanding the Constitution of the United States was just, I've just constantly been impressed. I told hundreds of people about that. I've been very impressed by that. It's an absolute model. You strike me as the kind of person who could be one of those rock star teachers on a variety of subjects. And so I think you're going to, and you'll find probably cultural differences. You may find that some people will gravitate to a traditional Christian education along the lines that St. Basil talked about. Mm-hmm. You'll find that some will gravitate to a progressive education, and there'll be different teachers for them.
Right.
And yeah. And I think you're going to see a radical decentralization along with the reform movement. And I don't think that's a bad thing, because I do think parents are confronting the idea that they can't always do it themselves. And I also worry that lots of people that I know are not aware that these homeschool curriculums are just as co-opted as public schools.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woo-hooer, a hand clapper, a high-fiver? I kind of like the high-five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At ChumbaCasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino-style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses, so don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Hey, guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Planet Oat Oat Milk is so rich and creamy.
I love it in my cereal, but also in smoothies.
With 0 grams of sugar in Planet Oat unsweetened varieties. But it gets even better. It's an excellent source of calcium with vitamins A and D that's delicious in everything. Mmm, including my lattes. Pick up the carton that has it all. Or visit planetoat.com for more. Planet Oat. Be good to you.
Yeah, they are, especially now that you have so many people on the left who are homeschooling, you know, because the field of education gets attacked from both sides. The left is always accusing educators of being racist, for instance, or being sexist or patriarchal or allowing abuse to go on, all of these accusations. And again, almost all of that pressure falls on the teacher. It almost always falls on the teacher. So there's all these impossible constraints that are placed on the teacher. You have to prepare your students to get a certain score on a test, but you're not allowed to refer them to discipline. You're supposed to take care of everything in the classroom. You're just supposed to magically make all of these teenagers be. That's why there's this huge exodus out of the field of education. The teacher shortage here in DFW is crisis level. You know, they don't even have enough substitutes usually to be able to cover a school day. So there's a lot going on there. So let's talk about the CRT issue. Which I think has been front and center. I totally understand where people are coming from, especially after a year of Black Lives Matter. I think that there are certain racial ideas that are just flat out absurd that have become commonplace. And people are worried about the schools being the platform where that is imparted to people. So, for instance, the idea that Black people cannot be racist. When people have seen that all over the place, the idea that there's this white privilege that is universal, even in the middle of a war between Russia and Ukraine, people are still talking about white privilege. You know, there's a lot there that is obviously dysfunctional and deeply wrong and destructive. So I can understand why people are worried about that. At the same time, I saw in the Texas state legislature how we were trying to push bills to protect young people and to shield them from grooming in school. And remember we went there and we had a I had a whole list, which I'm glad that that has inspired people because I know people in Florida read that mass resistance document. You know, it contributed to what happened in Florida with that bill about protecting children, but we didn't pass something like that in Texas. And the legislators who stopped it, they pointed to their CRT bill about banning CRT. And that led me to really believe that a lot of the discussion about banning critical race theory was kind of a pressure valve that was kind of redirecting people's, I think people's greater anger was about their kids being sexualized in school. Even though, and I do think that there was some of that racial curriculum was being inappropriately injected into the school system. I just think realistically, the greater threat, because there is racial content that has to be taught in the school. And so that's going to be there. But I don't think there's any reason for people to be bringing up sexual content in elementary school. There just isn't. So it's an interesting thing. I mean, what do you think is the best direction for the conservative movement to go now that the Florida bill that DeSantis signed has kind of changed the game, hasn't it? Because finally, one of those bills actually made it all the way and a Republican governor signed it into law, something I never thought would ever happen. I thought he would do like everybody else and just ban critical race theory and just call it a day, knowing that those anti-CRT bills, number one, I don't think they're actually going to be enforceable. And number two, I think if they are enforceable, the leftist education administration cliques are going to enforce those bills against any conservative teachers who try to talk about race. I think that's kind of how the CRT bills are going to go. But what do you think? How should conservatives proceed with this issue? Well,
we really should look back to the Common Core battles that took place here in Texas, right? I'm going to admit that I made a mistake there, right? We passed a bill that outlawed Common Core in this state. And I pushed for it hard. I worked hard for it, and we got it done. Common Core is still taught in every classroom in the state of Texas.
How'd that happen?
The reason is that you can't ban ideas. Okay. Yeah. Ideas can be repackaged, renamed. They can be snuck into curriculum in different ways. There's no way for you to keep ideas out of the curriculum. Fundamentally, what you have to do is just not have people who have these bad ideas teaching children.
Mm-hmm.
And, right. You know, if you've got a teacher teaching white children that they're inherently bad, that whiteness is inherently bad and evil, we just shouldn't have administrators who are, pushing curricula like that. And school districts that adopt this curricula and then they make teachers teach that. Like, I don't know what the parents understand this, but teachers don't pick the curriculum. You know, it's given to them by the district.
Right.
And the districts that do that should simply have the districts put under state control until we can get a new school board.
Right.
I really try to simplify the CRT thing. CRT is just nothing more than anti-white racism. There's just There's nothing crazy about it. There's nothing intellectually interesting about it. It's just plain old anti-white racism.
If we were to
blacks in the 1940s, they just start saying it about whites now. I mean, it's just the same exact thing. And there's no place for it. That's true. But the issue is that we have school districts that are buying this curriculum.
Yeah,
they're spending big bucks to purchase it. Right. When we had perfectly good curriculum curricula in the 70s and the 60s that doesn't have this stuff, that produced literate children who could do mathematics, that know American history, we have curricula that can do this from the past. So it's clear that the changes in curricula have caused this. And I think this is why I think it's fundamentally a conservative movement. We're really saying the school should go back to what they were doing in the past.
Mm-hmm.
And we know that it was cheaper and that it worked.
Yeah.
For fact.
Well, it's almost like I think that if we took the existing anti-harassment codes that have assumed so much importance in schools and we were to just actually enforce them across the board so that if you're targeting white people with unwelcome conversations that are not relevant to the subject matter and that are clearly discriminatory, that should be actionable. If we were to just apply the rules that we already have across the board to every race, then I think that stuff wouldn't pass the litmus test.
You're right.
To make it to the classroom.
As well, right? The same thing with boys and girls, right?
Right.
Boys should not be told that they're bad.
Right, and they're
told
that
all the time. They're actually told that all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that should not happen. And the fact that our material, I'll give you an example. My son goes to Capel Schools, right? Goes to Pinkerton Elementary. And I went to their library and I literally could not find a single book with a male hero in it. Not one.
It's all girl power.
I mean, I really tried. I spent 30 minutes. I could not find a book with a male hero in it. So I went out and bought almost 80 books. Okay. I bought all the Edgar Rice Burroughs books, Tarzan, all these books, and got all the books I read as a boy, 20,000 Leagues Under the Sea, stuff like that. And I donated them to the library and they rejected every single one of them. And they told me that they reinforced gender stereotypes.
This is a Capel?
Yes.
It's ridiculous. Yeah.
There's a huge problem, not just with the race, but with the sexes too. It's the same problem we talked about with boys and girls.
Right.
They're actually attacking one race and one sex.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And that just, voters have just got to get school boards in that will not authorize school districts to purchase curricula like that.
Right.
And to be fair, the school districts are often coerced by the State Board of Education to purchase these materials.
Mm-hmm.
And the State Board of Education is coerced to do it because you can't get federal funding for your textbooks, subsidies for your textbooks, if you don't have this material in there.
Right. Yeah. Well, and
we have to, you know, go to the federal money.
Well, and that, you know what was interesting? I just thought about this recently. I realized that a key turning point that people don't focus on enough is the 2009 stimulus, because that was a huge, remember at the time, that was an unprecedented infusion of money. People could not believe we were talking about $787 billion, which now, I mean, we burp that up, you know, and we don't even, we don't even think about it. But at the time, and that was a huge amount of money, and so much of it went to schools. I remember there was a whole separate bill that was just $500 million that was going to just six Ivy League schools.
Right.
You know, not Ivy League schools. It was like Stanford, four Ivy League schools. And then they, for good measure, I think they threw in one state school that was one of those, you know, elite state schools. And so there was all of this money that got thrown to education at that time. And so much of it was subjected to these caveats that it had to be, it had to further every single field. They were trying to further more women in every single field. And the only humanities field that did not have women in the majority was philosophy. So there was all of this money that was meant to try to get women into, and classics. That was another one. Classics, when I got my classics graduate degree in the early 2000s, was a conservative field. And it, truly, there it was. There were more men in it than women. Now I open up the classics journals and it's like I'm reading Ms. Magazine. It's a completely skewed, it's like Betty Friedan's history of the ancient world. And a lot of it was from that huge infusion of federal money. And a lot of that money also went to these faith-based organizations, because Obama was really big on saying, you know, we've got to reach, you know, we've got to put our agenda through the churches, because, you know, Black people go to church. And so we want to reach them through their churches. And so a lot of the denominations got that federal money that way,
and
too.
And the strings.
Yeah. My thing is, when I, for my 10 years that I was active in the conservative movement, I remember, you know, we would go to Washington and we would go to Austin. We would go to places, and the conservatives would never back us up, because they would say, we believe in small government. So we don't believe that the politicians in Washington should dictate how schools should be run. And this was always what they said. And they always said, this is why we don't believe that we should get involved in defending the conservative educators who got fired. So, you know, they sat on their asses for like 10 years while all of the conservative professors got purged from the academy. I mean, just so many of them were driven out. A lot of them signed non-disclosure agreements, so you'll never hear about them. And their argument was, we believe in small government, which I don't think that this is believing in small government. If there's already a large government structure that's imposed on you, that's forcing one ideology on it, I don't think you're showing that you're small government by letting them do that.
No, this was actually going to be part of my talk at UNT, speaking of education and miseducation. This is going to be a big part of my talk there, which was that one of the problems with conservatism that it shares with libertarianism. You know, I left libertarianism because I realized there's no libertarian path to a libertarian society.
Mm-hmm.
And I eventually came to disagree with the entire premise of the libertarian society, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Well, likewise for us, we have to recognize that there's nothing left for us to conserve. Now, this is a hard place for conservatives to be, because we've been standing in front of a train yelling stop, right? And that train has just run us over. Like, it's over. We don't have anything left to conserve. Right. So what we are really about now, we are really in a restorationist movement, which is different than a conservative movement. And there, you know, I've been telling my fellow conservatives as gently as I can, there is no conservative path back to the constitutional rule in this country. What will have to happen is there is a cold civil war between the left and the right. There can be only one of us. As Lincoln said, the country will either go all slave or it will go no slave. A house divided on itself cannot stand, and there can be no middle ground anymore. Likewise, with left and right in this country, there can be no middle ground. The country will either go all left, all communist, or it will go back to constitutional governance. There will be no in between. And what conservatives have to get comfortable with is they must seize the instruments of national power, whatever they may be, mm-hmm. and use that power against our enemies to defeat them. And when they're defeated, and only when they're defeated, will we be able to establish constitutional rule again. And in my view, that entails radical federalism. We're going mm-hmm. to have to come to grips with the fact we're never going to have a national consensus on abortion. Mm-hmm. California is going to have abortion and we're not. If you come to Texas and have an abortion, we're going to put you in a gas chamber and kill you. We're going to execute you. Mm-hmm. If you do that in California, you know, you can do what you want. We're going to have to recognize we don't have to live the same ways of life. Okay. Radical. And the union can stand if we do that. But right. only if Republicans recognize that you will only get your principles after you win. You cannot have your principles before you win. We are not comfortable using power, and all power in the United States is government power. We are not comfortable using government power when we get it. And what you said was a classic example of that.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. I mean, it's so perfectly self-defeating that yes. I often wondered whether the left had just planted our leadership onto the movement. And
it's one of the reasons that I think the left really yeah. encourages libertarianism in the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. Because libertarianism is functionally left-wing.
Right. Yeah.
It eliminates your ability to use power against the left.
Right. And they're also, it matches who they are. I don't think that the people on today's left they're not the left that I used to belong to way back when I was in my 20s, yeah. you know, and my early 30s. I don't think that they're anti-capitalist. I think that they love capital corporations. They love sitting on top of those things. They're no longer against the military-industrial complex. They love controlling the military. Right. They're no longer critical of churches. They love, you know, being able to get in a pulpit and preach in front of hundreds of people who are just enraptured by their words and think they're going right. to go to hell if they don't listen to what they're saying. They love all those things, but the libertarians mirror who they are because they get to have all those things because they already control, you know, right. the levers of stuff. And so if you just leave things the way they are, then the left will continue to take over those institutions. That's yeah. Right. It was the same thing with the religious liberty argument. And that's, I think, one of the things where education went wrong was that the conservative movement was so concerned with making everything about religious liberty, partly because that was great for fundraising and partly because that's what the left wanted them to talk about. They just kind of walked yes. into a trap. So everything became about how the schools are anti-Christian and look how uncomfortable Christians are in the schools. And meanwhile, while they were arguing that, the left took over the denominations. So you don't even really have a religious argument if the denomination you belong to is led by people who are going to go in court and say, no, this is not a tenet of the religion. This is just some person who's uptight and picking a fight for no reason. And actually, if he believed in Jesus Christ, he would be loving and he would just accept what's going on with patience and humility and, you know, all of this other stuff. So they made a lot of mistakes with that libertarian move, you know, trying to make everything libertarian. Yeah.
Big time. And, you know, you see the same with free market arguments very often.
Right, right, know? Right. Yeah.
You know, but the fact is, there is such a thing as private morality that mm-hmm. the government has no business dealing with. That's all true. But right. there's also such a thing as public morality, which mm-hmm. which the government and the people have an interest in. Mm-hmm. And we haven't been comfortable saying that because it's not libertarian, right?
Right.
It violates the libertarian non-aggression principle. You know, that's one of the first things I always tell when I'm in front of a libertarian audience. I said, listen, some of you might want to leave now because I'm going to trigger you because I'm not going to follow the non-aggression principle.
You might want to
leave now. You know, I don't believe in that principle. I do think there is public morality and there is such a thing as that. For example, I don't think we should be promoting homosexuality and transgenderism to children.
Right, right. That was Russia's law. Remember, and in 2014, people made such a big deal about that law at the same time that they were banning conversion therapy the United States. So we were, and the penalties for conversion, for promoting conversion therapy in the United States were like, you lose your license and your profession and you're fired and fine, you know, all these things. And in Russia, I think it was a fine of $150 if you were caught once trying to promote homosexuality to young people while we were banning promoting heterosexuality to young people.
Yeah, so heterosexuality.
Yeah. Yeah. That didn't make very much sense. Well, you know, I think that perhaps one of the turns that I'm waiting to see whether conservatives move in this direction is at least acknowledging that an America First policy or a truly nationalist policy means we do have to take public interest in what our young people are educated in. And you can either have the authoritarianism and the totalitarianism be imposed on you in a stealthy manner by the left, yeah. Or you can just admit that you do want some say in that and use the tools that are available to you, including government power. So that, you know, that's why I think what Governor DeSantis did was great. And I was great. I was so glad that he didn't let all of these, you know, National Review types talk him out of it by saying, no, you shouldn't be involved in
violates conservative principles, right?
Yeah, it violates conservative. Yeah. I think probably one of the boldest moves I would love to see in education is banning tenure. That would be awesome.
One of the best things we could possibly do. That would create churn,
yeah.
And you'd get some conservatives in there.
Yeah, and not only that, but it's like we do regulate labor. I mean, we have OSHA, we have, you know, anti-discrimination laws. We have things, yes, where we say there's labor practices that are unfair. You can't ask people in a job interview whether they're married or what their religion, right, is. I mean, it just seems like it's a no-brainer. You should be able to ban that and just, you know, get rid of that. That would probably be one of the best things. Yeah, and I don't believe that I don't believe that it protects freedom of conscience. It never did. So what do you think are the what are the core essentials that a young person needs to be taught through education?
We have to ask, what is the purpose of education in order to answer, mm-hmm, the question,
right?
And what is it that we're trying to do, right? And remember, it's something that can be done by somebody who's not a parent. Right. What are we trying to do with education? And we've talked about this before. I go back to St. Basil's formulation of this when he was struggling with how do we teach, you know, pagan mathematics and the histories written by pagans? And how do we do that as Christians? How does that work? And basically what he said was, a Christian education should focus you on those habits, mm-hmm, which will create a way of life which will lead you to heaven. And if you think about that, it becomes a different thing than just knowing things. It becomes something about habits. Well, what intellectual habits will cause a child to flourish and resist these leftist temptations that we see around us? Well, the first one would be a tendency to prefer primary sources.
Mm-hmm.
We should probably get students away from the idea that they learn from textbooks.
Right.
And I don't think there's any reason today in history to not read primary sources.
Right.
I'll tell you, my first experience with this was at the University of Dallas. I took a course in politics, and it was done by a professor named Sassine. And you're going to be surprised by this, but this was the absolute hardest course I ever took in my life. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
On the final, I actually filled up 5 blue books and I got an A minus in this course. Okay. And I went and asked Professor Sassine what it would have taken to get an A. And he just cheerfully said, "My God, Jeff, you did so good. If you'd only gone to outside sources and brought us some new material, you would have had an A for sure." I mean, this was a very difficult class. Okay, so he failed. He legitimately failed 70% of the class. Well, the textbook was him using his educational copyright privileges to print off entire tracks from primary sources. All we did was read primary sources. We never read a secondary source in that class. And it was challenging for me because I had trained myself to learn from textbooks. Somebody else is going to tell me what something says.
Right. And they're going to package it and curate all the information. Right.
Which is why I admired you so much when you were teaching the Constitution. And the way you went back to the primary document itself and the understanding of the historical use of the words and the historical grammar constructions. And I was just immensely impressed by that, Bobby. And I think that, so the first thing is, students need to start going to primary sources and stop believing what other people say about primary sources. If you think about the kind of political problems we face today, it's people believing people who are, writing secondary and tertiary sources.
Right.
So that's the first thing. Rely on primary sources. The second thing is we have to recognize that we talk about critical thinking. I don't know that that's the right word for it. We don't want people to be excessively critical. Okay. Mm-hmm. What we want is people who can reason and people who can make good judgments. Right. In order to reason well, you would think after all these years, we would come up with courses and curricula that would teach students how to reason better. But it turns out, after 120 years, and we have 120 years of data on this, we only know one way to teach students to reason better, and that's through the study of geometry. So we need to resurrect the traditional mathematics that have been, that were taught consistently until the 1980s.
Right.
And the basis for mathematics programs the world over, where they do really well, like look at Norway, where they, they only go to school for 6 months and they it's illegal to give homework. And they have some of the highest test scores in the world in mathematics. And it's because they highly emphasize geometry in the early years.
Right. Yeah.
We don't even teach geometry anymore, right? We teach formulas and they apply formulas, but we really don't teach geometry in the way it was taught before with proofs. And remember, we write proofs in English, okay? And so it teaches you to reason in a language, and it was an important part of an education. So we need to resurrect that. And we need to think very seriously about what it means to be a literate person today. Right? All the disciplines have discarded the idea that there's any kind of a canon. Okay, so we don't have canons anymore for this.
Right.
Can we not say that you really cannot be a literate Christian if you haven't read Dostoevsky's The Possessed? Can we not say that until you've read Chekhov's report on visiting a Russian prison, that you are really not an educated person on the effects of incarceration on families, that you don't understand the temptations that societies give people and the mercies that we ought to give our fellow citizens? Can we not just say that we need a canon of some sort, right? And that canon for a Christian would probably be quite different than for a progressive. There's no general agreement anymore. We've become a decadent country, decadent in the Latin sense of being decadenced and out of step with one another. But there must be some sort of literary canon that we can educate the passions and imaginations of our children, right? Yeah. And we shouldn't be afraid of that. For example, when was the last time that you heard of a student in high school being asked to do a research paper? Like, all they do are essays. Everything they're asked to write are essays. And an essay is your personal reflection on something, right?
Mm-hmm.
A research paper is when you're describing the views of experts in the field and constructing a conversation between them to come to some understanding of the best and latest thinking on a particular subject. Mm-hmm. This idea of education as entering into a conversation, it's like you're walking into a cocktail party with people you don't know. You usually keep your mouth shut for a while and listen.
Right.
So in an academic discipline, you would simply read a lot, right? Mm-hmm. You would read dead authors and enter into the conversation, right? Mm-hmm. Maybe at some point when the conversation turns to something that interests you, you might speak up a little bit and introduce yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And we don't think of education as entering into a tradition of speaking and conversing and discoursing on something. It's now memorizing facts for tests. So this idea of a canon goes along with the idea of getting rid of a standardized test.
Yeah.
I don't think there's a problem with this. We do it in mathematics, Bob.
Mm-hmm.
So we can't rely on the SATs at university level for testing mathematical ability, right? You don't do proofs on the SAT. So
right.
Your ability to stand up and prove a theorem just isn't going to be tested well there. So every university in America has its own test. Mm-hmm. You know, MIT has a test, University of Texas has a test, and it's a test that's really oriented to what their program is most interested in and is best at doing, right? That should be the norm, right? We should not expect educations to be standard. They should be tailored. And mm-hmm. this move away from standard to really looking at the goal of education rather than sort of some standard attainment or something. Because honestly, does it matter if somebody takes 2 years to learn Algebra 1 instead of 1 year? It just doesn't really matter. Mm-hmm. Okay. And I hate to break it to people, but, you know, I'm a topologist. You know, I've got a paper sitting on my desk right now that I've been reading for 6 months. I still don't even know the question that thing's asking. Okay. I read it, you know, about every other day. I don't even know what question the guy's asking, you know.
Right.
I'm going to keep reading it until I get it. Does it really matter that it takes me 6 weeks, 6 months, a year to get the question and somebody else got it in just a few weeks? It doesn't really matter, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have to get over that idea that you have to have uniform grades. So you might be fifth grade in mathematics and 10th grade in literature.
Yeah. And also, I mean, part of it too is already the education system is fulfilling the role of being a babysitter.
100%.
And so
role actually. That's actually what it does.
Yeah. Sometimes I wonder if instead of fighting that, we should just embrace that and own it and stop pretending that every single hour of the school day,
yeah.
you know, there is some highly pressurized race to attain. You're always racing against the clock to attain some standard body of knowledge and everything. Yeah. On a schedule. I don't know. I would love to just see a lot more playfulness brought into it.
So some kid doesn't get, what do they do in high school? Factoring quadratic equations. Some kid just has trouble with it for whatever reason. So what if he has to come back to it in a couple of weeks?
Right.
What's the big deal here? Why does it have to be on a schedule?
Yeah.
Because actually human research, when we do research, you know this, Bobby, when we do research, you do research in the humanities, I do it in mathematics. You don't do that on a schedule. You don't come to your insights on some, you know, R&D schedule that you put in your Google Calendar, right?
Right.
It comes from serendipity. It comes from unexpected twists and turns. You know, the light goes on suddenly while you're talking to someone about something that didn't seem to relate. How come we don't respect that in children? I've always wondered about that.
Yeah, I don't. I think it's just a confluence of factors that I think schools became really concerned with triage.
Yeah.
All of the disruptions and upheavals and injuries in society were kind of dumped on them to solve. And so they ended up with this patchwork of purposes and motivations and functionalities. And they lost sight of what actually schools are supposed to be. And a lot of it also is just the fact that parents are, you know, I don't want to blame parents, you know, because people do a lot of that. But I think it is, to a certain degree, a lot of the stuff that should be transmitted at home isn't. And people
are expecting. It's definitely not happening. And it's because they think the state daycare public school system is going to do it for them.
Yeah, they think that. And that's the hardest thing, because when you have a student who walks into your classroom, if they can't understand the academic side of it, you can work with them as long as they have, there's five things I would say that they would need to have. They would need to have maturity. They need to have diligence. They need to have humility. They need to have curiosity. And I would say that they need to have, what's another one? There are five that I always think of. Maybe those.
What do you think is most missing? What do you think is missing the most?
Of those, I think, all of them, these are character traits. Oh, honesty. You need those five things, okay? And those are things that, you know, parents have to get. If the parents are not transmitting those to the children, I think humility is a big one. A lot of students don't have a sense. Yeah, they don't have a sense of humility because their parents don't. You know, their parents think that the teachers are glorified gardeners, you know, or someone that they can boss around. So the kids, you know, they copy that. I think curiosity is another one. I think if people don't want to figure out what they don't know, then they're going to remain ignorant. So, and those are hard things to, I don't think schools can inculcate this in children. I think this has to come from the parents. That is hard. Yeah.
I mean, I'll use this as an example. I think St. John's University, right, in New Mexico, and where else are they? Where's their other campus?
I think they had one in Maryland, but you know that they did away with their Great Books program. They don't have it anymore.
Yeah, which is a real shame.
It's a real shame. Yeah.
Yeah. It was the only liberal arts school in America, I thought. You know.
Yeah.
But one of the things that they had is any teacher could teach any subject.
Mm-hmm.
You know. You know, I've often said, what does it take to educate a student? Well, it takes a knowledgeable teacher and it takes a willing student. If I take all those things you told me, that's willingness.
Yeah. Right?
You need a willing student and a knowledgeable teacher. I actually don't think you need a textbook or anything else. You just need a willing student and a knowledgeable teacher. And students today are culturally different than students from 50 years ago. And one thing is, yes, they lack humility, and it's shown in the lack of respect. I think a lot of conservative parents react to the videos from schools and the lack of respect to teachers. That indicates a tremendous lack of humility, right?
Yeah.
But the thing that I noticed the most is the inability of young people to ask questions and to know what an interesting question is versus an uninteresting question. And if I had to describe what getting a PhD is,
right?
It's just knowing what an interesting question is from an uninteresting one.
Yeah.
PhD education gives you. Right?
Yeah.
But they have, it's very clear that they have never entered, for example, in history, they've never entered into a conversation with writers who have different views on a historical event. And it never occurs to them that there could be philosophical disagreements in mathematics, right? They never question the material. And if I could, you know, describe what the process of rational thought is, it's having a conversation with yourself in which you question yourself. And this inability with other people to ask interesting questions that further the dialogue tells me that their internal monologue is equally as uninteresting and unfruitful. And so in a large way, I kind of like the German gymnasium system. You know, the Germans went away from this grade level system that we now use. We copied it from them under the Kaiser, and then they went away from it. And they created a system called the gymnasium system, where they actually don't teach writing at all until like eighth grade. What they instead focus on is teaching students how to have polite, mannered, cultured, and intellectual discussions with one another, with perfectly spoken German, perfect grammatical German spoken at all times, even at lunch, even in sports, right? And in eighth grade, they just tell them, write the way you speak and think, and they can write well. We have not, you can blame this a lot on parents. They have not taught their children to have interesting conversations and to ask interesting questions.
Well, we're seeing it right now, I think, because we're at the cusp of very cataclysmic international events. And I am very disturbed by how many young people just don't even have the... I remember when we were involved in the run-up to the invasion of Iraq. I was a member of the left then. I remember I led an anti-war movement and I organized a bomb conference. And I remember young people their spark, their nature was to question what was given to them. And I don't know what's going on, why we don't see that with young people today. I don't see it. Everyone who's questioning the propaganda, because I think that's most of what we're getting, you know, yes, out of Russia and Ukraine is propaganda. I mean, over, especially here in the United States, we're getting nothing but propaganda. Yep. And I don't see young people even acknowledging or understanding that a lot of what's being given to them is propaganda. They don't. And part of it maybe is because we replaced history with social studies. And so they think in abstractions and they think in categories. Right. And so they just look at it and they say, oh, someone who's aggressive to another country must be the bad person.
Right.
And they don't understand the context. They don't understand the backdrop. They don't have any point of reference. So they can be standing in Los Angeles making these comments about Russia invading Ukraine without understanding that the city that they live in used to belong to Mexico. You know, they don't, it's, I don't know. They just don't have that questioning capacity anymore. And it wasn't like that. I remember there was a time when young people, their natural instinct was to take in information and to ask, who's giving me this information? What's the agenda behind it? You'd think that this generation would be so much more prone to that because they were swimming in media, but they're not questioning.
And I'm gonna this is something that I talk about a lot, and as you know, for a long time I talked about actually almost creating courses for this.
Right. But
conservative parents in particular simply do not know how to consume media. They just don't know how to do it. Mm-hmm. There's a complete inability to read between the lines, to see a certain kind of historical bias. You know, let me give you an example. Like you and I have talked about this in some previous episodes. You know, I'm very critical of the Whig view of history, you know, which sort of sees history as progressing towards a free market libertarian utopia, right? And this Whig view of history was being critiqued in British historiography, you know, back in the 20s. I mean, it's nothing new. And I actually see a huge commonality between liberalism and communism in these progressive views of history that they both share. So I'm really down on that view of history. And so when I see those kinds of assumptions embedded in a news narrative, it makes me very suspicious, and it makes me want to ask for primary sources. Where would you go for primary sources today, you know, in the Ukraine conflict? The answer is bloggers on the ground.
Yeah, yeah. And then
primary sources today in a way you never could in the past.
Right. And this is one of the problems with the lack of foreign languages, you know, exactly. Is that you can't trust the subtitling. I've seen so many things that have come through, and that, you know, you ask someone who speaks Russian, is that what they're really saying? And they're like, no, nope, that's not what that.
I tell you this, how many times I've seen Putin misquoted with subtitles.
Yeah. Yeah. And also people use Google Translate and they don't understand that, you know, Google Translate is run by Google, and Google is the Alphabet Corporation, and they have all kinds of, and they will do things like go in and change the algorithm so that you can't translate things effectively and use words that
way. They'll modify translations, actually. Absolutely.
Yeah.
You can do it in Greek. Absolutely. 100%.
Yeah.
So how did we solve this problem in the old days? Again, you know, conservatism cannot be about conserving the status quo. We got to look to the past for how people solve these.
Mm-hmm.
We used to have these publications called intelligencers. And an intelligencer was a journal in which a panel of translators would translate research from one language to another. Mm-hmm. One of the more famous ones in mathematics was the Trans-Siberian Intelligencer. And it would translate Russian mathematics into German and English, and German and English mathematics into Russian, okay? Because mm-hmm. the Russians would have some of the best mathematicians in the world. And this idea of an intelligencer is something that we really need to resurrect so that we can get good translations of a German leader's speech by a panel of people, not just one person who might have an agenda, but a mm-hmm. panel of people who will challenge each other and then put that out for the rest of the world to see. And those intelligencers were how, like, Italian research on telescopes reached England in the Renaissance, for example. These intelligencers were how science was done really until the 20th century. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to resurrect that and stop relying on Google and huge media conglomerates that also, by the way, rely on Google to transfer things for us.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there, you know,
intelligencers, I think you'll find it very interesting.
Well, the most important thing right now is to take one every step that we can going forward. And I would be so excited if you made it to the Texas State Legislature. Just hope you remember all the little people, you know, that you knew along the way as you go and you're skipping, you know.
It's a servant role. It's not really a leadership role. You know, we live in a democracy still, hopefully. You know, it's not a leadership role. I'm here to serve my constituents and you. And Bobby, I want to thank you for having such a big effect on my views. You've challenged my views. You've informed me on things. I learn things from you every time I talk to you. And you're absolutely one of my best friends. And you're also one of the few people that I trust intellectually to really give me an honest critique of my ideas. And I just get that from you. It's so valuable.
Well, thank you so much. And I'm really sorry that I had to, I couldn't be more available to help everyone the last 7 months or so.
We all have lives.
Yeah, kidnapped by reality.
My friend, we have to be available to you.
All right. Well, I will definitely keep in touch, and I hope to be able to ask you about other things. I can't wait to have a discussion with you about world events, because I know you're going to have...
Let's do that soon.
I know. But before I get you on here to talk about world events, I'm going to have to do lots of research. So I know what I'm talking about. I don't want to get in over my skis. But thank you. And I look forward to seeing you again sometime soon. And thank you for anyone who's out there who's going to watch this. All right.
Thanks. Bobby. So long.